we're getting out of here. And we did. We got on these buses and zoomed up to Washington, up to Bedford. The day after we left, one of the bombs did hit about a half a block away from where we had been stationed. And had we been on the street as we were that day, Sunday, well, we'd have all been history as small bits of people, because it would have killed all of us.
To begin with, a much fuller sound and a much broader, much more musical sound, coupled with the so-called Glenn Miller reed section sound. The band had a lot of richness to it.
That original Gum Chum Kid there leaning on the bass is a lad that had the dubious pleasure of working for me at one time. His name's Sergeant Trigger Alford.
It was really worthwhile, because the troops over there really loved us. I mean, it was like the biggest thing. It made you feel good. When you do something for somebody else, it really makes you feel good.
March. What are you doing? Your pack has got your back as stiff as starch.
This is a mechanized war, they say. That saying is sure a bust,
'cause all that you see in the infantry is one another's dust.
I think General Doolittle knew what he was talking about when he praised the band. He said, "Captain Miller, next to a letter from home, your organization is the greatest morale booster in the European theater of operations." You can't get any stronger than that.
We'd go into London every Thursday and record these broadcasts, and Glenn would speak in phonetic German. Johnny Desmond would sing in German phonetically, and a lady named Ilse, who, you know, called herself Ilse, would do the talking in between numbers, propaganda like.
Soldaten, here is Major Glenn Miller persönlich.
Thank you, Ilse. You speak German very well. Ich kann nur sehr wenig Deutsch sprechen.
Nur mutig drauf los. Ich werde Ihnen schon helfen.
Good evening. I mean, guten Abend, deutsche Soldaten. Im Sprechen bin ich immer sehr kurz, denn ich folge immer dem Sprichwort, Last Blumen sprechen. Have I said that right?
Well, Paris was liberated while we were in England. And there was never any doubt that we were going to win the thing while we were there.
On the day when he was to fly from Britain to France, he invited me and I believe Ray McKinley, possibly Johnny Desmond, the singer, to accompany him on the sort of the Stars flight. There were eight seats or something of that sort. When we got there, it was very foggy. Glenn got very nervous, asked the pilot where were we going to fly, and the pilot said, "Don't worry about it, we're going to fly low over the channel." And Glenn said, "Oh yes, really? In that case, let's lighten the load and have my young friends go in the other transport." As a result, I'm talking to you.
And then I heard that he had left. Well, so what? He'd left. We were going to go over soon. Then when we landed over there and nobody was there to meet us, I knew something was wrong. We all did, but we didn't know what.
And I knocked on the door, and they had a maid there who had been with the family for some time, And I asked for Mrs. Miller, and she said, well, she's back in the bedroom. You better go back and see her. And this maid was just a happy kind of a person all the time, but this day she appeared very somber. So I went back, and Helen was sitting on the bed with a bathrobe and reading this telegram, and it apparently had just been delivered 10 minutes prior to my arrival. And she handed it to me, and it words to the effect like, the adjutant general of the army regrets to inform you that your husband, Alton Glenn Miller, with the serial number, is reported missing in flight. And she was just in tears, and I tried to boost her spirits. I said, they're going to find him, you know, I'm sure.
I felt particularly bad for his wife, Helen. They had, shortly before he went overseas, they adopted a couple of children that were babes and in the cradle. I went around to see her, and she was, you know, a wreck about it. So I remember trying to bring her up. I said, you know, maybe they crashed somewhere on the continent and he's a prisoner of war. I said, there are a lot of camps, a lot of prisoner of war camps. He may be in one of them. I tried anything to keep her afloat.
It wasn't a good feeling that he was missing, but we always thought for a long time that he would show up. For some reason or other, we always thought he would show up. I guess it was months. It was really a matter of at least 2 months that we finally resigned ourselves that he's lost.
The plane, the single-engine plane, went off in bad weather. They had no de-icing equipment on the plane, and the weather started getting worse as they went across the channel. And then one of two things happened. Either the plane's engine just froze, and they couldn't make it all the way, or else, and this is very possible, that there was a whole group of our planes coming back from a sortie, from an aborted sortie in France. The weather was that bad that when they got over to France, they found they couldn't make it. So they came back, and it's very possible that they saw this plane down below them, thinking it was an enemy plane, and dropped a bomb on it. But in any case, the plane never did arrive.
Once again your face comes back to me, just like the theme of some forgotten melody. In the album of my memory, serenade in blue. It seems like only yesterday, a small cafe, a crowded floor. And as we dance the night away, I hear you say forevermore. And then the song became a sigh, forevermore became goodbye. But you remain in my heart.
We're talking 1945 is when I was with the Tex Bennett Glenn Miller Orchestra. And it was the it was a twilight of the big bands, all of the great ballrooms that had come up during the war were closing off one by one, and television was just starting in, and it was just the passing of an era.
I was very excited about getting the part because I had this great admiration for the orchestra.
Musicians are very difficult to put across on the screen, and I think that the Glenn Miller story caught the essence of the man through a miraculous bit of casting. I'm talking about Jimmy Stewart.
And then one thing that I really was determined to do was to get enough instruction, get enough practice on the trombone.
Joe Uecker was the coach, his trombone coach.
After the third day of practice and so on, he came to me and he said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to quit. I said, why, you have something? He said, no, I just noticed it the way I behaved when I came home after the hours I spent with you, because the noise that comes out of that horn when you blow it, it really upset me. I went home night before last and kicked my dog. I've never kicked my dog in my life. I yell at my wife and the kids and everything. So I'm sorry. I'll just have to give up on it. And a thing just came. I'm glad I thought of it. And I said, well, what about this? How about if we plug up the mouthpiece of the horn and plug it up so I can't make any noise in the horn? He said, gosh, I never thought of that. All right.
Its scope is the exciting years just past when so much happened in the world, and especially to a couple of young people trying to make their way.
I'm broke. I don't have even have a job. I don't have any money. I'm in debt. Like I say, you're stuck with a no-good itinerant musician, that's all.
And I love him.
One of the things about the Glenn Miller Story movie that always amazed me was the same warmth that existed between June Allison and Jimmy Stewart in the movie existed between Glenn and Helen Miller. In fact, June Allison was so much like Helen Miller, it was almost scary.
Glenn's mother, she said, Glenn Miller was much better looking than I was, than he just, and she didn't like that at all.
In 1953, when the Glenn Miller Story came out, it brought about a great deal of interest in the whole Glenn Miller phenomenon. And all sorts of things started to happen. And a whole new Miller, post-Miller era developed because of this movie. And I understand that at that time, this was the most successful movie in the history of Universal Pictures.
It was a lot of fun in those days. The 40s were just a fabulous time for the big band era.
We really enjoyed sitting next to the guy and, you know, and knowing what his problems were and playing along and being in a 15, 18-piece band. It was really great.
You could not walk down the street with Glenn Miller and or, say, Benny Goodman or Harry James, you know, without being mobbed for autographs. That's a nice experience. I liked that.
The music is very big all over the world now. His style, when they talk about the swing bands, they talk about Glenn Miller.
He had a certain style of playing the music of those days. And I think it was just something different from any other band there was. And I think that's one of the reasons that he's remembered so well.